It's Christmas. Baby, please come home. Seriously, you too. Yeah. You couldn't even get the original version of that song.
Not on cassette.
I'm gonna now stop talking and hand the microphone over to our guest, and then I'm gonna get on the same mic with you.
Dave White gave me a stack of Christmas cassettes for Christmas.
I didn't say you had to play them all
but,
on air.
Well, I don't know what else I was supposed to be doing with them, and you know, it was the pickings were slimmer once I actually started digging through them because
no, they're not.
Like there's an Andy Williams one, you think, oh great, but it's not the original 60s Andy Williams one. It's his re-recording of favorites. It's like, no, nobody wants the re-recording. Nobody wants to hear the new material, BTO. We want to hear Taking Care of Business.
You've got plenty of other, there's like a dozen cassettes in that stack. And there's about a dozen other songs on the cassette that you just played.
Yeah, well, that's the one I picked.
It's a great song. But it's the U2 version.
I know, but look, if we had a cassette of Merry Christmas from Phil Spector or whatever, a gift for you.
Well, let's get one.
Then we would have, all right.
Let's get one.
Fine. Anyway, welcome to Linoleum Knife, a program where we discuss movies. I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film critic for TheWrap.com and What the Flick.
I'm the collector. I'm here to kill you.
Just introduce yourself.
I'm Dave White. I'm the film critic for movies.com. And that's it. You have two venues for film criticizing, and I have one.
We just got done doing our holiday special with Manola Dargis, which was a hoot and a half. And basically, a blatant way to remind you that I have a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And you can order a signed copy directly from the author, me. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and we'll tell you what is involved for all that. But the Christmas discussion continues, not just because I'm playing stuff off of a very special Christmas cassette that Dave White bought me, but because we have a guest, and our guest is a filmmaker who you know from everything from Trick to the Lizzie McGuire movie, but he is now carving out a niche for himself as the Helmer. I love that word from Variety. The Helmer of made-for-TV Christmas fare, including the new Lifetime movie, Holly's Holiday, which premieres this Saturday, December 8th, and will no doubt be rerun throughout the month and for the rest of our lives. Please welcome Jim Fall.
Hello. 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 Hello.
All right. I need to say a couple things here before you talk anymore.
Fine.
Guest. Please. Since I'm trying not to get a sinus infection here, we're going to put the mic closer to your mouth, Alonzo. And if I need to talk, I'll move in. That way you're not craning around to get to the microphone. We'll set it up for you to do your talking. Second item of importance. This is our first director to be on the show. And I don't want anybody getting any ideas that we're just willy-nilly bringing directors in.
I feel very honored. Very, very.
You got
honored.
Something you want to plug? You go find it. You find another podcast to plug it on. We do not have time to be
for shameless.
I don't want people lining up. Do like, I want to be on your podcast. Do you have Jim Fall on your podcast? That ain't happening. He's here because we like his beard.
Aw.
And he listens to the show.
I do. I'm an avid listener,
which I think is hilarious. But I'm grateful.
I do. I listen to it in my car.
Honored that you listen to us. So, yeah, I'm real serious about this. Do not start coming up to us and being like, we want to be on your show. You're not coming on the show.
Well, all right, then.
Wow.
Dave White has spoken. So, Jim,
yes.
So this is your second movie, Christmas movie in a row, yes?
Second. Who knew? I had no idea this would. I had no idea. I've caught a wave. I feel like I caught an indie wave with Trick that then died. And then I've now caught.
Your Trick died.
I've caught the tinsel Christmas wave. And listen, it's been good to me. I've made two Christmas movies in 2 years.
Now, do these movies like always shoot in July?
Yes. Yeah. No. Actually, Holiday Engagement. Both movies have the word holiday in them, by the way. Holiday, and Holiday Engagement. Anyway, Holiday Engagement, we shot literally when the movie took place between Thanksgiving and Christmas in sunny California. But it was actually kind of great shooting a Christmas movie. This Holly's Holiday we shot in 101 degrees in Santa Clarita.
Gross.
Faking New York City. It was really hot.
How did people not die of sweating?
That's where my genius... Well, they didn't. They did die of sweating, but my genius direction was to just look cold. When a dry, hot wind... when the actress was walking down the street, I said, when that dry, hot wind hits you, you need to go and close your coat, even though they were like literally stinking from sweat.
Oh. That's disgusting.
That's movie.
You've ruined it for me.
That's the glamour.
I haven't watched Holly's Holiday yet. Alonzo has.
Well, you can see it.
We've got it in TiVo. It's waiting for.
It's in TiVo.
It's in the TiVo.
You've scheduled
on our to-do list.
It's coming up.
Yes.
Now, I mean, was there like a 7-Eleven that you could send people in to go stand in the beer cooler for a while?
No, but we had. We had these four carolers who were literally like in wearing curtains and blankets. Their costumes were so thick, and we had to like run them into my. I put them in my trailer, like so fancy. I basically shared a small. In the honey wagon next to the toilets was my room, but it was air conditioned.
So your trailer's not like Will Smith's?
No.
Or Ashton Kutcher?
No, I think because the DGA says I have to
have
something.
Giant parties
something.
In those trailers.
Yeah. Anyway, I sent the carolers into my little air-conditioned cubicle so they would not die.
That's the kind of guy you are.
I am. I'm kind of that kind of director.
Now, did you have any affinity for this genre before? Like, are there Christmas movies that you love?
No.
Okay, this is two people in 2 weeks
who do not watch Christmas.
No, it's not that I don't watch them. I don't think I don't seek them out. I mean, I don't hate them. They just are. They exist. I love them. Like any normal person loves Christmas movies. My favorite one. The one that influenced me the most was a TV movie back in the 70s called The House Without a Christmas Tree.
Oh yeah.
Maudlin tale shot in video.
Mary Catherine Gallagher does a monologue from that one in one of the SNL sketches.
It still like sticks in my mind because it was so depressing.
It wasn't it sad.
Jason Robards,
the
right?
Mom's dead and stuff, and the guy.
Jason Robards.
The dad won't let the daughter
have a
tree.
Christmas tree.
Yeah.
This is a miserable film.
That's when TV movies were like dark where everyone died at the end. Like remember Queen of the Stardust Ballroom, Maureen Stapleton dead at the end. Just no reason, just dead.
Is that a TV movie?
Yeah, and then Ballroom was based on it.
I was saying, I always think that was a Merchant Ivory movie, but I'm thinking of Stardust. Or,
I don't know. Definitely Queen of the Stardust Ballroom TV movie then turned into Broadway quasi-flop called Ballroom. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm a big... I got to go to the Paley and see if they have... Because I've never seen The Year Without a Christmas Tree, and they never rerun the shot on video stuff.
It's on YouTube. You can watch it in pieces on YouTube.
Oh, nice. Okay. Because I'm a big fan of The Gathering, which is also Ed Asner will drop dead at any moment.
Oh, yeah.
So it's...
Yeah. Yeah. But other than, like, Meet John Doe, of course, and Jimmy Stewart, the other one.
It's a Wonderful Life.
The obvious one.
That little movie.
That little trifle. Christmas movies. Yeah, love them.
Now that you're making them, do you look to old ones to steal good ideas?
I have to be honest, I don't even think of my two movies as Christmas movies because they're really just romantic comedies that happen to take place over the holidays.
They do both have the word holiday in the title. You're participating in the war on Christmas, aren't you?
Yeah.
You've chosen a holiday over Christmas, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
But seriously, they're really just romantic comedies.
Good luck in hell.
Thank you.
Holly's Christmas doesn't have the same ring.
No.
Sure.
Although, Holiday Engagement was originally a Thanksgiving engagement, which was ridiculous. And there was no Christmas producer.
But you know what? People totally get engaged on Thanksgiving.
Well, they do. They do. But the whole movie was about Thanksgiving because the producer's brilliant idea was to make a Thanksgiving movie because there aren't enough, right? Then he realized...
Correct.
There aren't enough because Thanksgiving is one day and they don't play them. Right, nobody cares.
It's a holiday about eating.
Right.
No one expects you to feel good or happy or anything. There's no emotional expectation.
Yeah, it's like people don't learn the true meaning of Thanksgiving.
Well, it actually was more practical
than
that.
Pie.
It was more practical. they don't play those. They play Christmas movies from November through the end of February. Thanksgiving Day is like, what, one Thursday?
True, and it's not like they dredge up Home for the Holidays or, I guess Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, maybe, but that's about the only one that really gets a repeated sort of thing, yeah.
What's that terrible one with Julianne Moore in it?
Oh, The Myth of Fingerprints.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a Thanksgiving movie?
Psychic wounds sort of movie.
It's like the unhappiest J. Crew catalog you've ever seen.
I forgot what that was called.
Yeah.
That was like an art house.
I saw it at Sundance.
Of course you did.
And I hated it there.
Well, I managed to shove a bunch of Christmas in that movie because it dawned on me the day after Thanksgiving, everyone turns to Christmas, and there was nothing in the script that said Christmas was coming.
Right.
So I just happened to do it, and thank God, because then they ended up selling it as a Christmas movie, so it all worked out.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, because, you know, for example, Ernst Lubitsch's Shop Around the Corner,
mm-hmm.
one of the great romantic comedies of all time, mm-hmm. also a Christmas movie.
Mm, you're right.
You know, so right. I think you can certainly...
How does your film compare to that?
I prefer mine.
Yeah, what makes you think you're so Lubitsch? No, I'm just saying that a film can comfortably coexist in both worlds.
Exactly. And, you know. More people will see my film this Christmas
than Shop Around the Corner.
Exactly. So.
And that saddens me. You.
It kind of gives me a little bounce in my step.
Yeah, it does.
No, we're very proud of you. Tell us, in a nutshell, what is Holly's Holiday about?
Holly's Holiday is my second film about a woman falling in love with a mannequin. Basically, she passes this window where there's this perfect man in the window in the display, Christmas
display. So this is your On the Move.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay. Mannequin. I made my mannequin movie, I'm dating myself, but before that mannequin movie was made.
Really?
And my short film was on Nickelodeon. Before 2 years
what?
Before, so Hollywood stole
I've
my.
I've never manic- seen.
I posted.
Your short.
I posted my short yesterday on Facebook.
Oh, I'm going to watch it.
Oh,
now.
Okay.
It's yes.
Well, anyway. I thought Mannequin was a ripoff of A Touch of Venus.
Oh well, there's that.
Anywho.
Anyway, she trips and falls in front of this display window, and of course there's this. She works in an ad agency, and the scruffy photographer guy kind of has a crush on her, but she doesn't see him, and she trips and falls and knocks her head, and wakes up, and the mannequin's not in the window anymore. He's handsome Ryan McPartland, and the bulk of the movie in the middle is technically her dream, fever dream, but you don't really know that, or maybe you do. Maybe I'm not.
Are you spoiling this movie?
It's really, believe me, it's not like you're not going to know that's happening.
But somebody bumps their head in a movie, you can pretty much take it.
And you wake up, you don't really wake up.
In love with a mannequin.
Right. And then she realizes, you know, it's not all perfection, isn't all it's cracked up to be.
The mannequin is well cast. That guy is
Ryan
is eerily like, you know, he's like a computer program of handsome, you know.
He's blonde, handsome, square-jawed, funny too. Funny
yeah, guy. I don't know what he looks like.
He's
has he been in other stuff?
He's a Chuck. He's a square-jawed Aryan.
Yes, he was on the show Chuck. He played Mr. Awesome.
I've never watched.
I
Chuck.
Didn't either. Yeah. He's good.
a very good use of sassy black friend.
You know, sassy black friend. You know, Gabrielle came in and auditioned and was just so freaking funny. That's it. You are the sassy black friend.
Was it written as sassy white friend and you expanded?
No.
Her,
she
or no? Or was she
it?
Always sassy black?
You know what? I'm not sure. No, it was not actually written. It was colorblind. It wasn't written to be black. But I think we just thought we got to put some color in this movie because this movie is white.
So it could have been sassy Asian friend.
White.
Where's it set?
There's an. Well, it's set in
New
Santa.
York in
it's
quotes.
Set in Santa Clarita in July. but the script said New York City.
Yeah,
winter.
What I love about New York City movies is when it's all white people in it. And you're like, wait a second. That's not the way.
No, I fought to have this movie shot. I said, can we just shoot this in Los Angeles? Or keep it in L.A. just so I can actually shoot some exteriors that like and not have to shoot into corners.
Right.
And then we shot on the back lot, and it's actually really kind of cool. It adds that sort of.
No, it's, you know, it's. Look, Kubrick had to fake it in London, you know, for
that's
Eyes
right.
Wide Shut.
But the
that's
faking
right.
of it adds to the sort of fantasy level of the movie, so it actually worked. I think if the movie was grittier, it would point up how silly some of the concepts are. So,
and most of the movie is a dream sequence anyway.
Exactly.
So
the whole thing, exactly. That's how Why I justify not? It.
There you go.
It's I'm a, excited
it,
to watch it.
It's a vision of New York.
Exactly.
View par Jim Fall.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna make some cocoa. I'm gonna watch this movie.
Good. One more thing why I loved it though is there's a scene that I kind of rewrote where he's talking about fantasy versus reality, that they sell fantasy to the public when reality is really messy and sloppy and not what you think it is. And what's so weird is I'm making a movie that's a fantasy that has no basis in reality with a character talking about how there's no basis in reality in fantasy. So there's a little bit of an interesting, albeit threadbare.
It's meta.
It's kind of a cool. Yeah,
I'm stoked.
It is an adorable movie.
Thank you.
You
went to the gala premiere.
You went to the Friends screen.
Yeah, and Drew Drogi is in it. Previous guest of the podcast.
Oh, Drew's in the
Drew movie. Drogi is so funny, and I'm so proud of his scene because I rewrote that. I said I got to put him in this movie, and he makes that scene hilarious. He's so great.
He plays a fussy photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't say. What other kind of photography could he play in a film?
Well, I feel like I've even though both movies are not gay in any way, but mm-hmm. Holiday.
It's got Drew Drogi.
And the other one has Sam Pancake. Sam Pancake's in my first movie, and Drew Drogi's in this one. So as long as I can cast one of my favorite.
What's that show they do together? Something Choices.
Big Choices or
Strong
something.
Choices. Strong choices.
Yeah. Right. Nice. And
David Dean Bottrell as the maitre d'. Listen, I love David. He's an amazing actor. And he said, I said, would you play this? And he said, sure. And it's, he came in 5 minutes, gone, did it. It's great.
So Lifetime Television for Women and Gay Men, as they say. Check it out. Yes. Holly's Holiday. So Jim's going to stick around even though he's seen nothing. But then later we're going to mock his top 10 list. So
perfect.
It's very exciting.
All right, so let's talk about the collection.
Okay, well, this is your baby because I didn't see this thing.
Perhaps you remember not seeing The Collector.
I did not.
Yes. Very few people did, apparently, but they still went ahead and made a sequel.
Not the William Wyler Collector.
I never heard of this thing. Okay.
In the first movie, The Collector, it was called The Collector. The Collector killed a lot of people because that's fun. He tortured them a lot because that's also fun. In his lair. But you don't know where that is. He's got a lot of saw kind of like machines, and he just dismembers them and stuff. It's not a good movie. But I enjoyed the killings because I do enjoy killings in a movie. How do you feel about killings in a movie, Jim?
Who does it? I mean, I wish I had more killings. I want to do a disaster movie next, so I'll have some killings.
You know, I really want you to do a disaster movie next because I know what a big fan of that genre you are. I know that we're both Poseidon Adventure.
Totally, that's why I want to do it.
Junkies.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you need to do a movie with lots of killing.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be great.
The working title is Hellhole, but we'll get to that.
In The Collection, The Collector is back. And
is there action in The Collection?
This is a better movie than The Collector. Because the killings are better, and because the killing techniques are better. They're completely logistically impossible, financially impossible, structurally impossible. The best scene is also the most problematic. He murders every single person in a dance club with these sort of lawnmower/thresher kind of blades that spin
amazing.
And descend from the ceiling and chop off all their heads.
Like in Caligula, but backwards.
Yes, and the people who...
what kind of drainage does this disco have? Yeah.
Well, this is the problem.
Yeah.
Then the people who don't get killed from the lawnmower blades, they get squashed to death by a descending ceiling that he's rigged. And so... When the scene is over and you're going, yeah, he killed 300 people, yay, woo, you realize that the only way he could have possibly done this is with an entire crew of helpers. And, like, one person couldn't have set up all this stuff single-handedly, so there's that problem. The second problem is, this is a discotheque.
He is Chuck Norris in Expendables 2. He is everywhere.
The second problem is this is a discotheque.
Was there at least a good song playing?
It was. It was my favorite song. It went oomps, 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 oomps. And you realize that he would have had to have been the owner of the club.
And a promoter.
And then drove himself out of business by killing all the customers.
Right.
So it doesn't, you can't think much about the sense that it's making.
Maybe it was a rave, it was a one night only thing.
Then some, and the lady DJ gets shredded too, it's fantastic.
That's what she gets for playing.
Yeah, well. She was filling in for Digweed.
This is a Mario Diaz joint, I think.
So then they go to his house, which is called the Hotel Argento.
Oh, my.
What? Wah.
Yeah. Dario. And a team of mercenaries descend on the place to ferret him out because he has kept and collected the lone survivor of the disco bloodbath. And he is in trouble because the mercenaries are straight out of Escape from New York. And, like, one of the guys has a mohawk. It's the guy from The Wire.
Andre Royo.
Yeah, who's like your bro, right?
Well, I mean, he knows me.
Yeah, so...
We've been on two juries together.
Some film juries, not crime juries.
Yeah, no, right, yeah. Sorry. Yes, film juries.
And and Christopher McDonald, did I say that already? He's the rich dad who hires the mercenaries. Yeah. This movie's really stupid. I'm not going to give away all the really shocking spoilers. There are none. But everybody gets killed, and then stuff happens, and they get killed in cool ways. You know, it's like Iron Maiden deaths, and...
The implement, not the band.
Yeah. The thing, the crush you with blades kind of thing. I'm also kind of a fan of his face mask, because it kind of looks like a scrotum. It's very... In my review, I called it scrotumnal. It's like a little head corset, and I won't tell you the ending, but it is part of, you know, what happens at the end.
Can I ask a question? Are more men killed or women killed? Because
well, in the disco, there are some it's an equal opportunity killing.
Yeah.
He is no respecter of persons.
Well, it just seems like recently because of women, like, you don't, it's not really politically correct to kill women the way old slasher movies. Right.
You have to kill an equal number of women and men.
Yeah. You know, now more scantily clad men are being killed in these movies.
There were some shirtless dudes.
See?
Shirtless guys in the club scene.
A little something for the boys.
Yeah.
Women and men.
So then I also saw, this is not the worst torture porn film I've ever seen. I've seen almost all of them.
You saw the one with Elisha Cuthbert.
Yes, I did.
What was that?
Captivity. Wait, was that
her? Oh, I didn't see that.
Was that her in Captivity?
Uh-huh.
Captivity is the worst.
Look, now she's on Happy Endings. It's all good. But.
So anyway, I also saw Silent Night this week.
Oh, yeah.
Which is getting just a very sort of cursory theatrical release and going to be apparently on DVD next week.
I will be watching it eventually because it's a Christmas movie.
It is a remake, a very loosely plotted remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night. And it's not good. It's done by people who are really in love with the genre. They're really in love with 80s horror. And they're also really in love with Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's clear because there are some shout-outs to the original in this version.
Do any Santas have the jingles on the cuff?
I don't remember. Okay. But there are some... hang on just a moment. I have a problem.
These are the important things that I need to know.
There's some dialogue that's repeated from the first film. You can only know that if you've seen the first movie enough times. There's some axe-handling technique that's reminiscent of the first film.
And antlers, correct?
But nothing is good. No, that doesn't
antlers?
Happen yet.
What? Oh, boo.
The problem is that you can tell that the love that the filmmakers have for this movie is strictly the love of the practical makeup effects and the killing and the fun murders and the gore. And everything else sort of doesn't interest them, like logic or
storytelling,
suspense or storytelling structure. Or anything like that. Yeah. And so, you know, you've got Donald Logue in this film, you've got Jamie King, you've got Malcolm McDowell, and they're all just getting that money. Like, there's no... It's... I wish it were good, because I love... I love Christmas. B, I love killing. And C,
Christmas
I
killing
love
at Christmas.
Christmas killing, yes. I wish this were great, but it's not even really good. It's not even as good as The Collection, which is not good either, but I had a good time watching it.
Which is in turn better than The Collector.
Which is in turn better than The Collector, yeah. All right, you're next.
The big movie this week is Killing Them Softly, which is Andrew Dominik's follow-up to The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. A movie that I really loved, and Killing Them Softly, I did not love. It's another sort of, you know, wiseacre mobster movie with lots of, you know, very written speeches in between gun battles. And some of the writing is okay. There are two scenes between Brad Pitt and James Gandolfini that are terrific and should be their own movie and would have been a better movie. The big idea that they have is to remind you that while the action of the film is going on, the 2008 bank collapse is taking place. Get it? Because, you know, like organized crime, because it's like, you know, the financial markets.
Wall Street, man.
Which, you know, put that in the movie two or three times. I get it. Ironic counterpoint, whatever. There's like a dozen different times where like Bush is speaking in the background or Charlie Rose is interviewing Obama or there's some news story about the bailout or da da da. It's like, I get it. Shut up.
Every spare minute
is
filled with the buzzing of this news stuff from 2008. And it's the rest of the film. The funny, dirty dialogue. Oops. I'll get that.
Okay. This has never happened before.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Well, actually, okay, but it's been a while. It's UPS. Okay, lovely. Oh. Anyway, it's screener season. Yay!
Nice.
There are a lot of really good performances in the movie. In addition to Pitt and Gandolfini, Richard Jenkins is in it, Scoot McNairy from Argo, Ben Mendelsohn from Animal Kingdom, Ray Liotta and David Krumholz. And like, I mean, a lot. Is it David Krumholz?
I don't know.
David Krumholz or someone like David Krumholz. Anyway, it's well acted.
Scoot
McNairy. That's his name.
Oh my.
He's from Dallas, and he's in Argo. He actually won a Spirit Award for a film called In Search of a Midnight Kiss.
Oh,
he's in.
Who was he in Argo?
He's one of the hostages.
Oh.
I like him because his name is Scoot.
I know
his name
is Scoot.
Scoot. Not his real name, as it turns out. But
his real name is Scooter.
But yeah, this movie is rather annoying.
Here's what I liked about it. I liked the dialogue. I liked that it was funny. James Gandolfini says some of the dirtiest stuff in a film, pretty much of the whole year, which. Honestly, it's sort of great for his character because it makes you realize that he might not be the right hitman.
Yeah, his mind may be elsewhere
for this gig. Yeah, and I liked how violent it was because it's mob guys and they're shooting each other in the face and they're chopping each other's, you know, fingers off and stuff like that.
No, there's a scene where a major character is getting like majorly kind of tortured, interrogated. Pistol whipped, you know, whatever.
Real point of impact sort of beatings.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, I don't have the bloodthirst that you do, but I was impressed by the impact of that scene and how visceral it was and how well put together it was.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that kind of thing, and so when it's done well, I'm very happy. So in those moments, I was very pleased. I was thinking, well, this is the kind of mobster movie I want to see. I want to see them kill each other, and I want to see them say funny things like Reservoir Dogs, you know. And I know that's a cliche now, 20 years down the road from Reservoir Dogs, but it's a cliche I enjoy.
Well, it can be done well. I mean,
I like the idea of
Martin McDonagh does it.
Yeah, I like the idea of bad people sort of negotiating their own survival and being witty while they do it. And so that doesn't annoy me at all. Also, it has the best car explosion of the year.
I forgot about that. Yes, it does.
Is it a spoiler to tell us why?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. So
it's awesome. That is awesome. I did forget about the car explosion.
This is not a good film. But there's enough about it that I liked that I would say, if you're a fan of the same things that I'm a fan of, and you want to see the best car explosion of the year, you could do worse. You could be sitting through Silent Night.
Well, honestly. Okay, fine. Yeah. If these are the standards, I think ultimately it's a movie that annoyed me more than it charmed me, and I had higher expectations given how great this director's last film was and what a strong cast there is. So. It's a bit of a letdown, but, you know, if I've lowered your expectations now, maybe you're going to go, well, that wasn't so bad. That was all right. So, you know, maybe you should see it. I don't know. Yeah. Also this week, I finally saw Holy Motors, which Dave talked about.
It's so great.
Which Dave talked about a couple months ago, or a month ago or something, and naturally, I didn't take it on faith that I would like it as much as he did.
I just want to say that you should have. I'm just taking the microphone here away from you. You're always scoffing when I tell you
with
something
good
is awesome. And when I tell you that an art film is great, that's a fact. You can take it to the collapsing bank.
Okay, now, if I had not seen Pola X with you, would you have come home and said that I should see it?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's why. That's why I can't always trust you, because we don't have the same taste and stuff, and sometimes things that you think are awesome I find just unbearable. Not the case with Holy Motors, however. Loved it. And it's apparently making its way around, so, you know, if it hasn't, if you're not in New York or LA, it may get to you, so go to the website and find out if, you know, when and where it's going to be. Yeah, it's the new Leo Carax movie, and the only other movie of his that I saw was Pola X, and hated it. But this one is...
Pola X is fantastic.
Yeah, whatever.
Ignore...
But this one is extraordinary, and it is... I can't... It's a hard movie to talk about, even. But it's just... It is endlessly inventive and breaks the rules in all the right ways, narratively speaking. Denny Levant's performance is amazing. It's like, you know... basically take the entire cast of Cloud Atlas and put them in a movie that's 10 times better, you know, in terms of just like all the different roles that he plays and all the different prosthetics and makeup and costuming that's required for him to do all these different things over the course of a day.
While still looking exactly like
While still looking like Denis Laurent.
What is it about? What is Holy...
Do you want to take a stab at this one?
I will tell you. To recap for the people who didn't listen to the episode where I talked about it before.
Jim.
Well, I...
I
forgot.
That you listened at all.
Our so-called fan sitting right across the table here.
Really?
Denis, D-E-N-I-S. Yeah. I call him Dennis.
Fine.
Because I'm American.
You sure are.
He plays an actor who rides around in a limousine all day. Going from acting appointment to acting appointment.
For never seen cameras.
For never seen cameras and never explained audience. But each place he goes to, he has to dress up in a different costume and be someone new. And the people he meets in these scenarios are also actors. So they've all been sort of arranged to go there at the same time. He's being driven in this limousine by a now elderly French actress named Edith Scope, who was in Eyes Without a Face. If you're fancy, you call it Les Yeux Sans Visage.
Or if you're a Billy Idol backup
singer. Or if you're a Billy Idol backup singer, yeah. And that's the structure of it. He goes to like 9 or 10 different acting appointments. In some moments, he's an old woman begging on the street. In one episode, he's a hitman. In one episode, he is a different kind of actor in a motion capture suit where he has this weird sort of like animated sex scene with a woman.
Also, who's a contortionist.
Who's a contortionist, yeah. In one scene, he's Monsieur Merde. in a Beauty and the Beast style vignette with Eva Mendes, who plays a model. In another, he reunites with a former lover, played by Kylie Minogue. She sings a song to him. Not a Kylie Minogue song.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what it's about is about It's about movies. It's about performing. It's about lives and the roles you play in your life with various people. It's about a lot of different things. And the wonderful thing about it is that it's so inventive and so visually beautiful and so loose and open to your own
interpretation,
whatever you feel like bringing to it. It's not, you know, it's not banging you over the head with a message. It's just this gorgeous, you know, feat of cinema. And I think there's, you know, plenty of room in the world for that. We don't get nearly enough of that in especially American theaters. So that's what Holy Motors is about. That's what Holy Motors is all about, Charlie Brown.
Thank you for explaining that.
Lights, please. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and do my DVD pick this week, which is Synecdoche, New York, which is a movie that Holy Motors often reminded me of because so much of the movie is about the idea of people acting in a film and about the line that's drawn between us watching people sort of behave on film versus people acting in a film where they're acting like they're acting, you know, or where the fact that they are acting is something that we are watching them do and they are explicitly behaving in part of a scenario that requires the acting to be front and center, you know, inside its own sort of mini reality within the film. Both these films I found really exciting in that way and really powerful. So I'm a big fan of Synecdoche, New York. If you didn't see it a couple of years ago, it's one of my favorite films of the last 10 years. That's my DVD pick this week.
I don't know that I have a DVD pick this week. I didn't think of one.
A Christmas movie, perhaps?
The Grey just came in the mail. How long has that been out?
It's been out for a while.
It's been out for a while?
Yeah.
Why did it just come to the...
It was a screener.
No, it was a commercially produced copy that they sent us.
But they sent it as a screener.
Oh, well, that's my pick then, because it just showed up in the mail like 20 minutes ago. Liam Neeson versus the Wolves. It's pretty great.
Glad you put so much work into this program, Dave White.
I've been making beef stew all day.
It's really moving.
I've been cooking, slaving.
Do we have emails?
No, we have a top 10 list from our
live and in person.
Yeah. We do have emails, but we're going to blow them off this week.
Okay, fine. This is our first in-person top 10 list from a listener. And also, as Dave said earlier about directors, you're not coming on the show with your top 10 list.
Yeah, because after this, it's going to be ugly.
If you're a director and you want to send us your top 10 list,
by all means,
email it to us.
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
All right. This is my top 10 list. It actually might be a top 12 list. And listen, except for the first one, it's in no particular order. These are the movies that I'm just going to go. Okay. The first movie is The Exorcist because I saw it on Easter Sunday when it came out. My dad took my sister and I to see it. Easter Sunday, The Exorcist. Changed my life, made me want to make movies.
And me. No, I'm correcting your grammar. I'm not saying that I went that weekend.
Oh, yeah, sorry. English is my second language.
So you saw The Exorcist on Easter?
On Easter.
Nice. Is that why your Christmas movies are called holiday movies?
Exactly. Exactly.
Why do you hate the Jesus?
Yeah. Somewhere in Time.
Really?
Jane Seymour's gorgeous. The most beautiful John Barry score. Mm-hmm. Christopher Reeve's probably best wooden performance. It's.
You're either a middle-aged woman or Japanese.
I'm both. I'm both in my heart of hearts. The Shining.
Okay.
From noon till three.
Oh, okay. Charles Bronson and Jill Ireland.
Yes.
Right? That's a good movie.
I saw that at the drive-in when I was a kid.
Did you really? No one has seen this movie. It only recently came out.
It was
out.
The second feature in whatever the double feature was.
I think it's a brilliant, funny little gem of a movie that nobody has seen, really.
Yeah, it's very atypical Bronson.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's really charming and funny and has something to say about, you know.
I was supposed to be asleep in the back seat in my pajamas, but I was watching it because they were doing it.
They were.
Yeah.
He was kind of good looking then. Well...
In that, Charles Bronson was not a good-looking man, but he was hot in that
stevedore,
in that brutish kind of way.
Damn, yes.
Hell yeah.
Much like myself.
Outrageous! Exclamation point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, which has never been out on DVD, right?
Yes, it is.
It is? It okay. Because I remember seeing a really crappy VHS of it from Tapelenders Video in Dallas from their then tiny gay and lesbian section.
It's a wonderful, charming...
I don't know what this movie is.
It's about a Canadian drag queen.
Who comes to New York City to make it big. And it's just one of the first like gay movies, like 1977.
Yeah, early gay feature. And it's interesting
charming,
because like,
funny.
Like he's considered this embarrassment by the other gays who are trying to be
because he wants
all,
to be a, you know, a drag queen.
And you know, they're trying to be all butch.
Oh, I see.
And he's really good. And it kind of has a tragic, though. They made a sequel.
Too Outrageous,
which is not on DVD. That's not on DVD.
Which I've heard is terrible. I've never seen it.
It's not very good. I saw it in the theater, actually, and it's bad. And I think
there's a level of outrageous that you really can't go past.
It's true.
Yeah.
Is Craig Russell alive?
No, I was going to say that he had sort of a tragic end in the sense that, well, he had AIDS and died of AIDS, but he also, I think, was an alcoholic, and he had a Carnegie Hall debut that he was supposedly drunk. I'm not sure if this is all true or not, but he kind of... had that moment and kind of messed it up, supposedly,
and
then got sick on top of it. But the movie's so sweet and really moving. Making Love. Love that movie. It Happened One Night.
Indisputable.
Indisputably amazing.
Yeah.
The Poseidon Adventure, yes.
This is the greatest film of all time.
Greatest film of all time. I begged my mom to take me to see that movie when it came out. I cut out every ad in the newspaper every day in the Altoona Mirror, pasted it in my scrapbook.
Hell, upside down.
Who will survive?
Who will survive and what will become of them? That's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's different.
Who will survive in one of the greatest escaped adventures ever?
Exactly.
Was the tagline.
Yeah.
Right. Combining the talents of 15 Academy Awards. Something they added up all their Academy Awards. It was ridiculous.
Is that story true about Shelley Winters being asked to read for some role and she just reached into her bag and put two Oscars on the table?
It should be if it's not.
Because isn't one of them in the Anne Frank house?
One of her Oscars?
Yeah. Because she for,
maybe.
She, oh, because she... Diary of Anne Frank.
That would be amazing.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. A Touch of Class.
I love that movie!
I love that movie.
And it's not on DVD.
It's not...
I'm pretty sure it's not.
It's just wonderful.
Oh, George Segal, Glenda Jackson, such a great
so
couple.
Great. She stole the Academy Award from Ellen Burstyn.
Well, yes, but still.
Actually, but she deserved it. She was great.
She was oh, God. I love that period of Glenda Jackson. Like
totally.
Hopscotch totally. And Sunday Bloody Sunday, which just came out from Criterion. Yeah. Oh, yep. Is she still an MP?
Is she what?
She's a member of Parliament.
Right. I think she is because she hasn't,
she's so great.
Yeah. My Foolish Heart, Susan Hayward.
A movie you showed me that's real good.
I've never seen it.
It is it's not on DVD. It was out on VHS for 2 seconds and Jim Snow.
And it was screen. It was streaming on Netflix for 6 months and then they.
I wish I'd known. I would have plugged it.
I know, and they come and go. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I know the logic on that. It's the only movie that is based on a J.D. Salinger property.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay. And apparently, after that, when he was like never again.
Right.
And it's unfortunate because the movie's actually really. Really moving, and it's probably her best performance. Mm-hmm. It's
based on Uncle Wiggily in Connecticut.
Yeah, really good. Okay. Willy Wonka original.
Totally.
Just right.
I saw that when it first came out.
Yeah, me too.
In the original release.
Oh yeah. And then there's two TV movies: The Bermuda Depths and Born Innocent.
Oh, is that the Coke bottle one?
The broom handle.
That's the broom handle.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay, I knew something.
I've seen Born Innocent. I've never seen The Bermuda Depths. What is that?
Rankin and Bass, bringing us back to the Christmas. Of it all, produced a few live-action movies.
They did The Last Dinosaur, didn't they?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know that one. But this is a bizarre tale that takes place. You can't even explain. It's about some huge turtle that Connie Selleck is in it.
Huge turtle, Connie Selleck.
There's a huge monster turtle. There's some bad model boat effects, but it's haunting. It actually really is a haunting little TV.
Is it on YouTube?
No, it's on that special order DVD thing. You can get them from
Warner Archive.
Yeah, Warner Archive.
Oh, okay,
it's worth a watch.
I will keep an eye.
Burl Ives. Speaking of Christmas, they took him. I'm sure Rudolph because of Rankin and Bass. I'm sure they put Burl Ives in this movie.
Interesting.
Anyway, that's my top 14.
TV movie that I love that nobody remembers, and it's. Not even all that good, but it's just one that I saw at the right age, and Make Me an Offer with Susan Blakely and
going back to Poseidon Adventure, Stella Stevens.
Really?
Yeah.
Susan Blakely, yeah.
She has spent the last 4 years working to put her boyfriend through medical school, and then right when he's about to graduate, she catches him with another woman, and so she becomes a high-powered L.A. real estate agent.
Okay.
And at one point, backs into his Mercedes and knocks it off a cliff.
Oh, my God.
You know who else became a real estate agent?
Oh, we talked about this. Who?
Sharona.
Oh, well, yeah, no, I knew that.
My Sharona?
The real Sharona of my Sharona.
But no, who were we talking about this week? You were telling me he was a real estate agent in New York now.
Miriam.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. Not a famous person.
Not a famous person. No. Unless you think of all the people in my book.
That's
as
true.
Famous.
She is a supporting character in Exile and Gotham. For you cultists out there who are wondering, she's now selling real estate here. Awesome. Well, Jim, thank you for coming.
Guys, it's been a pleasure and an honor.
We are thrilled. And again, Holly's Holiday, premiering December 8th on the Lifetime Network.
And if you're in a marathon mood, at 6 o'clock on the other channel, Hallmark, my other Christmas movie, Holiday Engagement, plays right before it.
So that's 4 solid hours of Jim Fall holiday action, people. Real quick, I want to give a shout-out, of course, to our friends in the podcast universe. The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, finally having a second episode. How do I know this? I'm on the second episode. Woo-hoo. How did that happen? I emailed Malcolm Ingram, and I said, you need to make a second episode. Why don't you interview me about my Christmas book, and let's do it. And we did. It'll be coming on soon, I hope. The Criterion cast, Fat Guys of the Movies.
How many times did he try to make you talk about your own balls?
It didn't come up this time, actually. All good right. For him. The Criterion cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with That Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, where Dave and I will both be appearing soon.
When?
We're taping that Sunday night.
We are?
Yes. After shopping day. And, of course, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a review with as many stars as they will let you put on us. It helps people find the show. You can also stream this program on Stitcher Radio or at thelounge.com. Follow our Facebook page, or rather like it, or whatever it is you do with a Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter, at LinoleumCast. Check into this program on GetGlue.com. And again, drop us an email at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with your questions, your comments, your top 10 list, or to order an autographed copy of my holiday film guide,
right.
Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yeah.
It is the season, folks.
I'm not fooling here. I'm going to buy that book.
I have a signed copy.
Better buy that book.
I showed up to the screening and bought a copy.
Bless your heart. So we will catch you guys next week.
Wait. We didn't knife Jim.
Oh my goodness.
Damn, I thought I'd get away with it.
You're busted on somewhere in time.
Oh, man.
Because that's not
Jane Seymour.
It sucks.
Not Richard Matheson's best screen adaptation.
You don't believe that Christopher Reeve could will himself back in time just by willing himself back in time?
I need a gizmo for time travel. But other than that.
What else? What else is wrong with his list? Is that it?
That was the only thing.
I really thought you'd rip me apart more. No, look,
from noon till three and touch of class, we're down.
I'm thrilled. I didn't think you'd even. No, from noon till three.
Yeah. You're 90% knife.
You are 90% knife, Joe.
That's
Paul.
An A. You're grade A.
That's crazy.
The health department gives you an A. All right. Thank you for listening, folks. We appreciate it. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.